All right, good to see everybody. So, welcome to the evening Bhagavad Gita class. So, anyway, so towards the end, I'll have a little announcement to make about the Radhastami program, which is actually getting more complicated at every minute. So, let's start by chanting Jai Radha Madhava. Make sure everything's all right. Sound, okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Vadadhari Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vadadhari Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Manachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunya Bihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunya Bihari Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Vadadhari Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Vadadhari Yashoda Nandana Brajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Brajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Uva Kunya Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvatakacharya Osu Teta Sutachi Shimad His Divine Grace Savaya Chananana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Goti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Vidas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidvaita Garadha Shibasadi Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopit, Gopinath, Shyama Kunda, Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavanam Ki Jai, Maturanam Ki Jai, Jagannathaswami Ki Jai, Yuvanamai Ki Jai, Srimati Lalasi Devi Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Purnananda Hari Hari. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Radhi Pacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So now Om Magana Tumadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakya Chakshura Niditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my most respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we'll continue with the Bhagavad Gita discussion. And here we go. We're just finishing up the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Last two verses, actually, we're halfway through the next to the last verse in the the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which, okay, here we go. We're right in the middle of the purport of text 54. So, let's start. In the Vedic literature, the Gopal Tapana Upanishad, Tapani Upanishad 1-1, the following statement appears. Satchidananda Rupaya Krishnaya Klishtakarane Namo Vedanta Vedaya Gurave Buddhi Sakshade. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Krishna, who has a transcendental form of bliss, eternity, and knowledge. I offer my respect to him, because understanding him means understanding the Vedas, and he is therefore the supreme spiritual master. Then it is said, Krishna vai paramam daivatam. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. It's also from the Gopal, Tapani Upanishad 1-3. Eko vasi sarvaga Krishna idyaha. That one Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and he is worshipable. Eko pi san bahuda yo vahati. Krishna is one, but he is manifested in unlimited forms and expanded incarnations. That's also from the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Interesting, all this information is in the Upanishads. The Brahma Sangita, the 5th chapter, text 1, says, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadirada Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna, who has a body of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He has no beginning, for he is the beginning of everything. He is the cause of all causes. Elsewhere it is said, Yatravatirnam Krishnakyam Aram Brahmana Kriti. The Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. His name is Krishna, and he sometimes descends on this earth. And the word for descent is called avatar, which means someone who crosses down. Similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find a description of all kinds of incarnations of the Supreme Personality Godhead, and in this list, the name of Krishna also appears. But then it is said that this Krishna is not an incarnation of God, but is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Ete changsa kalakpumsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So that verse actually says that all the other incarnations that are mentioned in this chapter are portions or portions of plenary portions of Krishna, who is the Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He's the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Matak parataram nanyat. There's nothing superior to my form as the personality of God at Krishna. He also says elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Adirhi Devanam. I'm the origin of all the demigods. And after understanding Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, Arjuna also confirms this in the following words. Remember, this is from the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavam. And that's right after the four nutshell verses. Remember the four nutshell verses? Hopefully everybody does. If you don't, you're in trouble. Aham sarvasya prabhava. Remember that? I'm the source of everything. And machita magita prana. That my devotees are always conversing about me, understanding me, and they are deriving great satisfaction and bliss by this process. And tesham satadiyuktanam. That to those who are devoted to me and worship me with love, I give them the understanding of which they can come to me. To those who are devoted to me, I take away the darkness born of ignorance. I dwell in their hearts, take away the darkness born of ignorance. Hamagyana dam jam tamaha. I now fully understand that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, and that you are the refuge of everything. Therefore, the universal form which Krishna showed to Arjuna is not the original form of God. The original is the Krishna form. The universal form with its thousands and thousands of heads and hands is manifest just to draw the attention of those who have no love for God. It is not God's original form. The universal form is not attractive for pure devotees who are in love with the Lord in different transcendental relationships. The Supreme Godhead exchanges transcendental love in his original form of Krishna. Therefore, to Arjuna, who is so intimately related with Krishna in friendship, this form of the universal manifestation was not pleasing, rather it was fearful. Arjuna, who was a constant companion of Krishna's, must have had transcendental eyes. He is not an ordinary man. Therefore, he was not captivated by the universal form. This form may seem wonderful to persons who are involved in elevating themselves by fruitive activities, that is, material activities meant to acquire more in this world. But to persons who are engaged in devotional service, the two-handed form of Krishna is the most dear. Got it? The most dear, the original, the one with the most intimate devotees, the one with the most characteristics, the one with the most intimate pastimes, and the only one who plays a flute. So mat karma krin mat paramo mad bhakta sangha varjita. Varjitaha nivayara sarva bhuteshu yasa mam iti pandava. So mat karma krit, engage in doing my work, mat parama, considering me the supreme, mat bhakta, engaged in my devotional service, sangha varjitaha, freed from the contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation, nirvayaraha, without an enemy, sarvabhuteshu, among all living entities, ya, one who, sahi, mam, unto me, eti comes, Pandava, O son of Pandu. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. So I think you all know what contaminations of fruitive activities means. Fruitive activities means you're working for the fruit or the result of some particular activity. You're thinking of yourself either acquiring more things or enjoying a particular position, or enjoying being worshipped by other people, etc. And mental speculation means basically those who try to figure out the Supreme Personality of Godhead using their teeny little brains and not following the Vedic injunctions. In other words, they don't accept the Vedas as the absolute, so they speculate. Anyway. It also means those who want liberation. Okay, pretty self-explanatory. Anyone who wants to approach the Supreme of all the personalities of Godhead on the Krishna Loka planet in the spiritual sky and be intimately connected with the Supreme Personality Krishna must take this formula as stated by the Supreme himself. Therefore, this verse is considered to be the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Wow. Let's read the verse again. This is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of the fruit of activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and is friendly to every living entity, living being, he certainly comes to me. And that's exactly, well, roughly, like the nutshell verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. What is that verse? Anyabhi lashava shunyam ganakarma anavritam anukuyena krishnana shilam bhakti uttamam, which means, try to paraphrase it in relationship to this verse, that one has to be devoid, which is the same as free, from desire for fruitive activities, and devoid of a desire for not only mental speculation, but liberation. And one who positively does what Krishna wants, does it with the spirit of trying to please Krishna, and is active in doing it. And that's pretty much everything, except for this last part, which is added in this verse, which who is friendly to every living being. And that's actually from the Isopanishad. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanupashti sarva bhuteshu chatmanam the total Navigyagupshite, the one who actually sees Krishna in everyone's heart and everywhere, is never hates anyone or anything. In fact, he sees everyone or every living entity to be his brother and sister. So that's the point. Who is friendly to every living being? Being friendly to every living being means Jata Shatrava. He doesn't have any enemies amongst anyone. Even though a devotee may have people who think that the devotee is their enemy, a devotee never considers anyone to be his or her enemy. Very important principle. So if you have this friends and enemies conception, you're not on a very high level of devotional service. So, purport. Actually, we're reading this. We're going to continue in the middle of the purport. The Bhagavad Gita is a book directed to the conditioned souls who are engaged in the material world with the purpose of lording it over nature and who do not know of the real spiritual life. The Bhagavad Gita is meant to show how one can understand his spiritual existence and his eternal relationship with the Supreme Spiritual Personality, and to teach one how to go back home, back to Godhead. Now here is the verse which clearly explains the process by which one can attain success in his spiritual activity, devotional service. As far as work is concerned, one should transfer his energy entirely to Krishna conscious activities. As stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.2.255, Ayukam vairagyam uchite. So, in other words, one can conquer his attachment to material sense objects by engaging things in Krishna's service, and this is known as vairagya. Vairagya means renunciation. So, real renunciation means to understand that everything belongs to Krishna. Very important point. Even this body that we think belongs to us. I was listening to a class today, Prabhupada was talking about how the body belongs to us. And just like, he gave the example, or the metaphor, analogy, just like if one is living in an apartment, and you don't own the apartment is owned by someone else, then in the same way, we are living within this body. And we don't own the body. It is owned by someone else whose name is Krishna. And so you have to take care of it in regard to the wishes of the owner. And when the owner of the apartment wants to get rid of you, let's say your lease runs out, then you have to leave the apartment or else you'll go to court to get you out of the apartment. So in the same way, when the lease runs out on this body, then you have to leave the body. No, and another point about this is an intelligent person, when they know the lease is running out in their apartment, they'll start looking for another place to live. So we have this lease that is gradually, let's say, decreasing in length. It's going to run out sometime in the near future. Near future means in the next 50, 100 years. I don't know, you'd say 100 years for me, I would be 171 years old. But sometime it's going to run out, so it behooves you to look for some place to reside after this lease runs out. And the material energy enters back into whatever, you know, like the body becomes, we hate to gross people out, but the body becomes food for worms, food for birds, if you happen to be a Parshi, or it becomes ashes if you happen to be a devotee who cremate the body. So this very thing that we're very attached to, we have to leave. So anyway, we should make some plan. If you don't make a plan, it's simply foolish. And then you're just going to be in trouble in the next life. No work should be done by any man except in relationship to Krishna. This is called Krishna karma. Now, in this particular case, the word karma means work. It means work for Krishna. One may be engaged in various activities, but one should not be attached to the result of his work, the result should be done only for him. Him means Krishna. For example, one may be engaged in business, but to transform that activity into Krishna consciousness, one has to do business for Krishna. Now, let me say it's for Krishna, not with Krishna. You have some people, not only in India, but practically all over the world, who do business with Krishna. They'll go to the temple and they'll say to the deities that if this business enterprise is successful, then I will give you 50% and I will give 50%. And so they're doing business with Krishna, which is all right. It's better than doing business without Krishna. But we're supposed to do business for Krishna. What does it mean to do business for Krishna? It means giving Krishna the results of that business. And the results of that business mean the money you make doing that business. That's right. And what does that mean to give Krishna the money you make doing that business? It means you can take some of that money for your own personal maintenance because you're engaged in Krishna service. You can take some of that money for the maintenance of your family because they're devotees, hopefully, and you're raising them in Krishna consciousness. And the balance, after you've utilized the money properly, not spent too much on too many amenities, too much luxury, then you can give for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay. If Krishna is the proprietor of the business, then Krishna should enjoy the profit of the business. That reminds me of a funny story about how people sometimes they come and offer things to Krishna, but then they take it back. Now in America, this is called an Indian giver. Now, the reason it's called an Indian giver, it refers to the American Indians. That someone would give something to the Indians and take it back, okay? So, we've had many, many experiences of people coming to the temple and saying, I would like to offer my car to Krishna. And then they have a car puja. Now, you know, Sri Kar, Charana Padma, Kevalabhak. Not Charana, but Wheel Padma. The lotus wheels of my car. So anyway, and they put garlands on the car. And then after all that's done, they drive the car out away. And of course, I think you've all heard of the story that I told where people would put their gold coins in the middle of a fire sacrifice. You know, not so the gold coins got burnt, but just like on the outskirts of the fire. And they said, we were offering this to Krishna. And then after the fire sacrifice, even though I thought that this was going to be an extremely good fire sacrifice because we were going to make off with the gold coins, they took the gold coins back. So here Prabhupada explains that the business man is in possession of thousands and thousands of dollars. And if he has to offer this to Krishna, all this to Krishna, he can do it. This is work for Krishna. Instead of constructing a big building for his sense gratification, he can construct a nice temple for Krishna, and he can install the deity of Krishna and arrange for the deity service as is outlined in the authorized books of devotional service. This is all Krishna karma. One should not be attached to the result of his work, but the result should be offered to Krishna, and one should accept as prasadam the remnants of offerings to Krishna. If one constructs a very big building for Krishna and installs the deity of Krishna, one is not prohibited from living there, but it is understood that the proprietor of the building is Krishna. That is called Krishna consciousness. If, however, one is not able to construct a temple for Krishna, one can engage himself in cleansing the temple of Krishna. That is also Krishna karma. One can cultivate a garden. Anyone who has land in India, at least any poor man, as a certain amount of land, can utilize that for Krishna by growing flowers to offer to him. One can sow tulsi plants because tulsi leaves are very important and Krishna has recommended this in Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Krishna desires that one offer him either a leaf or a flower or fruit or a little water, and by such an offering he is satisfied. This leaf especially refers to the tulasi. So one can sow tulasi and pour water on the plant. Thus, even the poorest man can engage in the service of Krishna. These are some of the examples of how one can engage in working for Krishna. Also, it's stated that Krishna doesn't accept any offerings unless it has tulsi on it. Wow. There's that whole Govardhan story. When the residents of Govardhan were worshipping this gigantic form of Krishna and worshipping Govardhan Hill, and as they were worshipping, they performed this Anakut ceremony in which they piled up mounds of grains, chapatis, sweet rice, halva, whatever. And Krishna ate everything in sight, and he asked for more. The word is anyor, anyor, anyor. I want more, I want more, I want more. And nobody could understand how to satisfy Krishna. So what they did is they took a tulsi leaf and offered it to Krishna, and Krishna was satisfied. The word mat paramaha refers to one who considers the association of Krishna in his supreme abode to be the highest perfection of life. Such a person does not wish to be elevated to the higher planets, such as the moon or sun or heavenly planets or even the highest planet of this universe, Brahmaloka. He has no attraction for that. He is only attracted to being transferred to the spiritual sky. And even in the spiritual sky, he is not satisfied with merging into the glowing Brahmajyoti effulgence, for he wants to enter the highest spiritual planet, namely Krishna Loka, the Loka Vrindavan. He has full knowledge of that planet, and therefore he is not interested in any other. As indicated by the word Madbhaktaha, he fully engages in devotional service, specifically in the nine processes of devotional engagement: hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering prayers, carrying out the orders of the Lord, making friends with him, and surrendering everything to him. One can engage in all nine devotional processes, or eight, or seven, or at least one, and that will surely make one perfect. The term Sangavarjitaha is very significant. One should disassociate himself from persons who are against Krishna. Not only are the atheistic persons against Krishna, but so also are those who are attracted to fruitive activities and mental speculation. Therefore, the pure form of devotional service is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11 as follows. This is the verse I just quoted in the beginning of the discussion of this verse, of the verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Anyabhi lashita shunyam jnana karma mahavir kab anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti rutamam. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami clearly states that if anyone wants to execute unalloyed devotional service, he must be freed from all kinds of material contamination. He must be freed from the association of persons who are addicted to fruitive activities and mental speculation. When freed from such unwanted association and from the contamination of material desires, one favorably cultivates knowledge of Krishna. That is called pure devotional service. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulasya varjanam. That means accepting what is favorable, having the sankalpa. Sankalpa means the intention, or even a vow, to accept those things favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject those things unfavorable. That's from the Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.676. One should think of Krishna and act for Krishna favorably, not unfavorably. Kamsa was an enemy of Krishna's. From the very beginning of Krishna's birth, Kamsa planned in so many ways to kill him, and because he was always unsuccessful, he was always thinking of Krishna. Thus, while working, while eating, while sleeping, he was always Krishna conscious in every respect, but that Krishna consciousness was not favorable. And therefore, in spite of his always thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day, he was considered a demon. And Krishna at last killed him. Of course, for those of you who don't know who Kamsa is, Kamsa basically was Krishna's uncle. And he had taken away the kingdom from Ugrasena. And Kamsa basically had heard the prediction when Krishna's mother and father were getting married, that's Devaki and Vasudeva, that the eighth son of Devaki and Vasudeva was going to kill him. And so he understood that was Krishna, Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was always thinking of Krishna in this particular way. He was more Krishna conscious than most of us, but in an unfavorable way. Of course, anyone who is killed by Krishna attains salvation immediately, but that is not the aim of the pure devotee. The pure devotee does not even want salvation. He does not want to be transferred even to the highest planet, Goloka Vrindavan. His only objective is to serve Krishna wherever he may be. Of course, there's that statement in the Bhagavatam. Narayana Paraksave Nakutashina Deviti Swargamapavarga Narakeshu Apitulyarta Darshana. That a pure devotee of Krishna, it's called Narayana Parayana, that means the pure devotee of Narayana Krishna, doesn't care whether he is in heaven, whether he is in hell, whether he goes back to Godhead, because he sees all these things or all these different locations to be exactly the same. Now, why is that? Because wherever he goes, heaven, hell, back to Godhead, he's doing the same thing. And his consciousness is the same. And he's madly in love with Krishna wherever he goes. The only place where a pure devotee won't go is into the Brahma Jyoti, because in the Brahma Jyoti there's no activities, no ability to think of Krishna, and it is boring as H-E-L-L. A devotee of Krishna is friendly to everyone. Therefore, it is said here that he has no enemy. Nirvairaha. How is this? A devotee situated in Krishna consciousness knows that only devotional service to Krishna can relieve a person from all the problems of life. He has personal experience of this, and therefore he wants to introduce this system, Krishna consciousness, into human society. There are many examples in history of devotees of the Lord who risked their lives for spreading of God consciousness. The favorite example is Lord Jesus Christ. He was crucified by the non-devotees, but he sacrificed his life for spreading God consciousness. Of course, it would be superficial to understand that he was killed. Similarly, in India also, there are many examples such as Thakur Haridas and Prahlad Maharaj. Why such risk? Because they wanted to spread Krishna consciousness, and it is difficult. A Krishna conscious person knows that if a man is suffering, it is due to his forgetfulness of eternal relationship with Krishna. Therefore, the highest benefit one can render to human society is relieving one's neighbor from all material problems. In such a way, a pure devotee is engaged in the service of the Lord. Now we can imagine how merciful Krishna is to those engaged in his service, risking everything for him. Therefore, it is certain that such persons must reach the supreme planet after leaving the body. Now, why do people risk everything to serve Krishna? Actually, there's two reasons I can think of right now. Of course, there's probably more reasons. It's not that they're just some mundane hero, you know, rushing headlong into the battlefield. That's not the reason. The reason is that they actually are para dukkha dukkhi. Now, what does that mean? That means they actually consider the suffering of others to be more important than their own feelings. That's compassion. That's empathy. Para dukkha dukkhi. And because of that, it gives them tremendous pain to see others in pain. And because they're in tremendous pain, they do something about it. Just like, for example, if I'm in tremendous pain, let's say I have a toothache. Thank God I don't. And I have tremendous, tremendous throbbing pain. I'm sure many of you have experienced this when you have a toothache. The tooth is just throbbing, throbbing, throbbing. Then you go to the dentist. Hopefully. Or you tie a string to the tooth and put the other end of the string on the door and have someone slam the door. Or you take some pain relief, or you figure out something. But anyway, because when one is experiencing pain, it's an impetus to do something. Because when you're experiencing pain, you can't sleep, you can't eat properly, right? You can't just like engage in ordinary social dealings with people because you're in extreme pain. That's a fact. I'm sure some of you have experienced that. That when you're in extreme pain, someone may talk to you sweetly and you're thinking, well, I wish they would go away. So the same thing applies to a devotee who is infinitely compassionate. He sees others suffering. And then he just feels their pain. He can't keep himself from trying to help them. And of course, as a devotee, he knows the best way to help them. And we find other people who are not Krishna conscious who may also feel pain to see people suffering materially. And then they make some political or material solution which temporarily may relieve that person's pain, but doesn't relieve the person's pain or problems or existential anxiety for a long period of time. It's just very, very temporary. Temporary expedient, as they say. So, because they may not know even how to help the person. What they do may actually be more harmful. I'll give you an example. Let's say someone breaks his back and he falls down on the ground. And I go and try to pick him up. I may create more havoc. I may break more of his bones. I may sever the spinal cord because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a paramedic. A paramedic doesn't mean a transcendental doctor. That means paramedic means someone who helps people in emergency situations and knows how to transport people so they don't incur any further injury. But I don't. I don't know that stuff. I'm just a Hare Krishna devotee. So based on that, a devotee can be truly compassionate because of his mood of intense compassion. That's one thing. The second reason why a devotee is compassionate is because he sees that Krishna wants this other person back with him. Krishna is missing this other person. That's a fact. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we find the story of Gopakumar, who went back to Godhead, and Krishna revealed after Gopakumar went back to Godhead and got his spiritual name, Sarupa, Krishna revealed that he was missing Gopakumar. He was just wondering, when are you coming? When are you coming back to me? So you're actually relieving Krishna's headache by helping others. So those are the two reasons, the impetus, two types of impetus that a devotee has for going out. Of course, another impetus may be when the spiritual master says, hit the road. And to please the spirit, and to please the spiritual master, one does that. Even though one may not be experiencing compassion, even though one may not be thinking of Krishna's pleasure, but just out of the mood of service towards the spiritual master, desire to please the spiritual master, that's the same thing. So that's another source of enthusiasm for someone to be compassionate and help others. But anyway, as human beings, whatever, you know, just normal human beings, we see people suffering. How can we just sit back? We've talked about this before. Like, how can someone just go and stay in Vrindavan for their whole lives? Unless there happens to be that service in helping people in Vrindavan, I understand that. But, and retire at the ripe old age of even 60 or 70. Like, look at Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he was 70 years old. Nobody would criticize him for staying in Vrindavan. In fact, they criticized him for leaving Vrindavan. Yet Prabhupada felt so much of an impetus to help us, he was overwhelmed with compassion. That's a devotee. A devotee is overwhelmed with compassion and overwhelmed with the desire to please the spiritual master. That's the other reason I mentioned. And overwhelmed with the desire to please Krishna. I mean, there's some stories that when Prabhupada was at the Radha Damodara temple, one of the neighbors, or maybe several of the neighbors, could hear Prabhupada crying out at night to Rupa Goswami, to his spiritual master, with intense longing and hankering to help people, intense longing and hankering to please the spiritual master, intense longing and hankering to please Krishna, relieve Krishna's headache. So that's the point. His service risking everything for him. And therefore, Prabhupada says, therefore, it is certain that such persons must reach the supreme planet after leaving the body. I'll repeat that last sentence. Therefore, it is certain that such persons must reach the supreme planet after leaving the body. Must means it's going to happen, there's no doubt. In summary, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation and the form of time which devours everything and even the form of Vishnu four-handed, have all been exhibited by Krishna. Thus, Krishna is the origin of all these manifestations. It is not that Krishna is a manifestation of the original Vishva Rupa or Vishnu. Krishna is the origin of all forms. There are hundreds and thousands of Vishnus, that means expansions of Krishna. But for a devotee, no form of Krishna is important but the original form, two-handed Shyamasundara. In the Brahma Sanghita, it is stated that those who are attached to the Shyamasundara form of Krishna in love and devotion can see him always within the heart and cannot see anything else. One should understand, therefore, that the purport of this 11th chapter is that the form of Krishna is essential, and supreme. That's the purport of the whole chapter. That the form of Krishna, or Krishna manifesting himself in his original form, is the original form and essential and supreme. And there's nothing higher. You've just heard the highest truth. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the universal form. And I think we have time. Yeah, we'll go to chapter 12, which is one of my favorite chapters. And that chapter 12 is entitled Devotional Service. Wow. And chapter summary is Bhakti Yoga, pure devotional service to Lord Krishna, is the highest and most expedient means for attaining pure love of Krishna, which is the highest end of spiritual existence. Those who follow the supreme path develop divine qualities. Okay, we're going to start with the first text. Arjuna vacha hevam satata yukta ye bhaktastvam bharupasate ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yogavitamaha. Arjuna vacha, Arjuna said, evam thus, satata, always, yukta, engaged, yea, those who, bhaktaha, devotees, twam, you, parivasate, properly worship, yea, those who, cha, also, a p again, aksharam, beyond the senses of yuktam, the unmanifested, tesham, of them, k, who, yogavit, tamaha, the most perfect in knowledge of yoga. Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? This is a very important question. Which is better? Which is the highest understanding? Those who serve you, you know, the people who serve you and worship you in your original form of Krishna, Vishnustu Bhagavan Swayam, or people who think that the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested, the light, your energy, is better. Which is better? So it's interesting, the impersonal Brahman, let me just explain impersonal Brahman for a second. The Brahman is generally taken as the effulgence around Krishna. Krishna has an effulgence. So, an effulgence means brightness. So, it's called the impersonal Brahman. However, ultimately, the impersonal Brahman is not impersonal. The realization of the impersonal Brahman, that is, the merging into the impersonal Brahman, is an impersonal realization. Whoop. That's strange. There's a noise. Let me just wonder what that noise is. Whatever it is, I just muted it. So the realization of that Brahman is impersonal. It's impersonal realization. But the Brahman itself is not impersonal because the Brahman effulgence around Krishna, the white light, clear light, or whatever you want to call it, the energy, is actually composed of unlimited numbers of little jiva souls. Like that song goes, twinkle, twinkle, little jiva soul, how I wonder what you are. Up upon the Brahman so bright, will you, what, I forget the rest of the song. Anyway, so the personal Brahman is not actually impersonal. So it's just the realization or one's illusion that everything is impersonal. So it's an illusion. It is an illusion because nothing impersonal. Okay, so here Arjuna is posing this important question, which is better? Which is more perfect? So Prabhupada explains that Krishna has now explained about the personal, the impersonal, and the universal, and has described all kinds of devotees and yogis. Generally, the transcendentalists can be divided into two classes. One is the impersonalist, and the other is the personalist. The personalist devotee, that means one who accepts the ultimate realization is a person God. Personalist devotee engages himself with all energy in the service of the Supreme Lord. The impersonalist also engages himself not directly in the service of Krishna, but in meditation on the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested. Don't ask me how you can meditate on something that's unmanifested. I have absolutely no understanding, except for philosophical understanding, that because I'm attracted by persons, and especially by the Supreme Person, Krishna. And if you tell me just to meditate on a light, it'll be very hard. I remember before I came to Krishna consciousness, actually just to be honest to everyone, I used to try to meditate on the light. And sometimes I would even have a candle. I didn't use an electric light because that was really materialistic. But I used a candle. I would take a candle, light it, of course, and light it and meditate on it. Oh, become the light. Really. That was pretty stupid. We find in this chapter that does not have the different processes for realization of the absolute truth, bhakti yoga, devotional service is the highest. If one at all desires to have the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he must take the devotional service. Those who worship the Supreme Lord directly by devotional service are called personalists. Those who engage themselves in meditation on the impersonal Brahman are called impersonalists. Arjuna is here questioning which position is better. There are different ways to realize the absolute truth, but Krishna indicates in this chapter that bhakti yoga, devotional service to him, is the highest of all. It is the most direct and is the easiest means for association with the Godhead. Interesting story in the Jiva Dharma written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Once upon a time, there was an impersonalist yogi, and he was meditating. And he was actually very advanced in the impersonal realization. He was like that. Paramahansa, and a sannyasi. And as he was meditating, he wasn't feeling that much bliss or any bliss, actually. A devotee happened to come by, and the devotee was chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Kirtan, most likely. And the sannyasi experienced the greatest happiness just by hearing that. And eventually he jumped out of his impersonal realization, ran to Mayapur, Navadvip area, and he became a great devotee and took on the name Vaishnava Das, that means a servant of the devotees. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord explained that a living entity is not the material body, he is a spiritual spark, and the absolute truth is the spiritual whole. In the seventh chapter, he spoke of the living entity as being part and parcel of the Supreme Whole and recommended he transfer his attention fully to the whole. Then again, in the eighth chapter, it was said that anyone who thinks of Krishna at the time of quitting his body, here's my squirrels again, is at once transferred to the spiritual sky to the abode of Krishna. And at the end of the sixth chapter, the Lord clearly says that of all yogis, one who always thinks of Krishna within himself is considered the most perfect. So in practically every chapter, the conclusion has been that one should be attached to the personal form of Krishna. That is the highest spiritual realization. Nevertheless, there are those who are not attached to the personal form of Krishna. They are so firmly detached that even in the preparation of commentaries to the Bhagavad Gita, there's this Dr. Radhakrishna again, Prabhupada's making reference to. They want to distract other people from Krishna and transfer all devotion to the impersonal Ramajyoti. How can you be devoted to the impersonal Ramajyoti? Be devoted to the light. Be devoted to energy. They prefer to meditate on the impersonal form of the Absolute Truth, which is beyond the reach of the senses and is not manifest. Don't know how to do it. How can you meditate on it? Something that's impersonal, beyond the reach of the senses, not manifest, pretty difficult. And so, factually, there are two classes of transcendentalists. Now, Arjuna is trying to settle the question of which process is easier and which of the classes is most perfect. In other words, he is clarifying his own position because he is attached to the personal form of Krishna. He is not attached to the impersonal Brahman. He wants to know whether his position is secure, the impersonal manifestation, either in this material world or in the spiritual world, the Supreme Lord, is a problem for meditation. Actually, one cannot perfectly conceive of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, Arjuna wants to say, what is the use of such a waste of time? Arjuna experienced in the 11th chapter that to be attached to the personal form of Krishna is best because he could thus understand all other forms at the same time and there was no disturbance to his love for Krishna. This important question asked of Krishna by Arjuna will clarify the distinction between the impersonal and personal conceptions of the Absolute Truth. Important question. And tomorrow we will go on and read text 2 in this chapter. So we're going to stop our sharing and allow you all to ask questions. And at the end, we're going to make a little announcement of what's going to happen the day of Radhastami and the day after for some of you of Radhastami, depending on which day you're celebrating Radhastami. Okay, who has a question? Does anybody have a question? Let me make sure my...
Hare Krishna Gurudev, Dhanyavad Pranam.
Hey, you don't look like Radha Padma.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Hey, well, oh, you're Radha Padma. Okay. Okay, well, you can't, so what's up?
Gurudev, other day you were mentioning about like you don't want to go to the Vaikuntha planet but want to go to Golok Vrindavan, but then you also mentioned actually you want to serve Srila Prabhupada eternally, being in this world, helping all of
or
us.
Wherever Prabhupada is. Prabhupada's in the spiritual world, Prabhupada's in the world, wherever.
Okay. My question is, like, from the stories of Srila Rupa Goswami and other devotees, like, while they were engaged in the spiritual world, they were also serving here as well. And yes. Does that mean all the pure devotees, like Srila Prabhupada, he is there in the spiritual world and same time they are here? Oh, so
you got it.
Okay, so
absolutely right. You're absolutely right. They are both places simultaneously.
Doesn't mean that one stays here, because I was thinking, we always talk about going back to Godhead, going back to Godhead, and then also serving Srila Prabhupada eternally and serving Guru eternally. So where do we come?
Well, that's the same thing. That's position of being liberated even while one is here in this material world is called Jivan Mukta. And in that liberation, one is able to participate in his spiritual functions in the spiritual world simultaneously to being here in this world. Prabhupada, in fact, mentioned that a pure devotee, in addition, has a spiritual television with which he can tune into any of Krishna's pastimes at any time. So, in addition to being wherever you are in the spiritual world and also in this material world, you can just like go to Google. I'm just joking. And Google Krishna's pastimes. But you can enter into Krishna's pastimes or observe Krishna's pastimes as Lord Ram, as Lord Narasimha, Varaha, Kurma, etc. Okay?
Thank you, Gurudev. Can I ask one more
Yeah, you
question,
can ask one question.
Gurudev? Where this concept of impersonalism arrived in Bhakti Yoga? I mean, is it like something new of this age, or it was there in the
No,
previous?
it's
How
always
it
been there. But
always?
the way it generally arises is because one is afraid of one's personal identity. Prabhupada explains this actually, that we have so many different types of relationships in this world, and in many cases, these relationships cause us pain. I mean, even if it's the best, best possible type of relationship, you know, people die. People get sick. I mean, it's really painful, these different relationships. And you know, your favorite pet passes away. Of course, you probably don't have a pet. No dogs or cats or anything. Anyway,
I'm
so all right. So we have, or people don't treat us. There's arguments. You know, even between, let's say, husbands and wives, there's arguments. I'm sure you don't have any arguments with your wife. But anyway, in most cases,
That's not
husbands and wives, they argue. They have differences of opinion. So just thinking, oh my God, it's so miserable. I thought everything was going to be perfect when I entered into this relationship. And so after a while, someone thinks, well, if personality, individuality is causing so much pain, then it's better to get rid of personality and individuality. In other words, because one doesn't want to accept, one is fearful. Prabhupada explains this. One is fearful of a personal spiritual existence because of their experiences in this world. And that's a big impetus. You know, if you look at this world, you'll see that it basically it's Dukaliyama Shashvatam. Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punah Bharatino Arjuna. It's from the highest planet to the lowest planet, there's all this like pain going on. I mean, you work in the hospital, don't you see pain sometimes?
Yes,
No?
all the time.
All the time. It's painful. I mean, it must be painful even to see it. So if you're looking at all these things, you say, you know, how can individuality, personality, or having a body be something good? So the ultimate realization must be the negation of this world. In other words, if you negate everything, that's the opposite. But that's not really the opposite. Just like you have a mirror is not the negation of what's happening in the real world. The mirror just reflects it in a perverted way, you know, backwards, so to speak. Left becomes right becomes left. And a mobile phone camera does the same thing, in case you haven't noticed. You know, makes your left side look on the right side look on the left side. And so while I'm using the zoom thing, it actually, I've set the adjustment so that my left side is actually my left side, my right side is actually my right side. Although when I'm looking at the reflection myself, was interesting, the left side is my right side and the right side is my left side. But although, so it switches it for you. So if I look at my reflection, right now, this looks like my left side to me. I'm looking at my picture right now, and this looks like my right side. But actually, I know you're looking at it the opposite direction. It was interesting. So anyway, so the point I'm making is that the opposite of something is not negation, just like the opposite of heat is not nothing. The opposite of heat is cold. Right? The opposite of up is not nothing, is down. So the opposite of this material world is not nothing. It's a double negative, but anyway, not nothing, but it's an interesting way to express it. It's something, but it has opposite qualities. Instead of, let's say, in this material world, we have temporary nature. I'm sure you've heard this before. We have temporary nature, ignorance, and misery. So the opposite of temporary nature is not no nature, like the impersonalists say. The opposite of ignorance is not no knowledge. The opposite of misery is no feeling. The opposite of those things, the opposite of temporary, is eternal. Whoops. Seeing someone cook right now. Let me put her on mute. I don't really enjoy seeing someone cook. Anyway, unless they're cooking for me. So the opposite of temporary is eternal. The opposite of ignorance is knowledge. And the opposite of misery is bliss. But they're thinking the opposite is to negate everything, to make everything zero. That's because of bad experiences. I mean, let's use my example. It'll be a little funny here, like I usually am. Let's say I've had all sorts of bad experiences with disciples who never follow what I say. So, being an impersonalist, I say it's better to have no disciples. But if I was a personalist, I'm just using this example, I would say it's better to have good disciples. And people like that. You know, many people are traumatized in this world. I mean, for example, let's say someone has a really bad marriage, then they'll say, well, I never want to get married. You understand? But the point is, they're just doing, it's very reactionary. It's not reality. They should have a good marriage. The opposite of a bad marriage is a good marriage, not no marriage. Or if one has all sorts of bad relationships, one becomes an iconoclast. One doesn't want any relationships. So that's why people take up impersonalism, because of their experience. Like, we have one lady who comes to our temple every day, and she's meditating on Brahman for like 6 hours in the temple room. She doesn't move. I mean, it's just amazing. I was thinking, if I had as much devotion for Krishna as she has for, you know, sitting down in one place, I would be dancing with Krishna every night, you know. But why is she doing that? I mean, inevitably, it's because she's had so many bad experiences in this world. It's just like frustrated. Completely frustrated, you know, just escape from this damn place. It's like impersonalism is effective suicide. You understand? Just end it all. Goodbye, cruel world, as they say. Mm-hmm. This is actually a song like that. It goes, goodbye, cruel world, I'm off to meditate on Brahman. You know, it starts like that. Anyway. Gonna chant some om today. Like that. It's an interesting song from the 1960s. Anyway. I changed a few words there. But, you know, people take up impersonalism because of frustration. And that's why. That's the impetus. And it's the fact that, you know, we do a lot of things because it's called PTSD. You know what PTSD is?
Yes.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes.
So we're all suffering from post-traumatic stress disorders, and we just rebel when we think, oh, personal relationship with God. Oh my God, how can that one have a personal relationship with God? Or we project our own conception, thinking, you know, a body means limitation. But actually, a body doesn't mean limitation. To say that God has a body, or is a body, because God is not different from his body, is limited. It's limited to say that God doesn't have a body. That's limiting God. So anyway, there's many reasons. Prabhupada points it out. It's usually due to frustration. with this material world, just want to get it out of here. Everything's so miserable.
So
You're still
could
young, you won't understand that in your age.
it really?
You're still thinking everything is beautiful, peace, love. I have my young wife, you're thinking, one day your young wife will be old lady. And then your daughter will move out from your house and you'll be left with the empty nest syndrome. Anyway, that's the way life is.
So Gurudev, frustration leads to speculation, and then they come up with this impersonal
Yeah, they
theory.
use speculation because they think it's a negation of what they've experienced.
Okay.
It's true that if you have some bad experiences in this world doing a particular thing, then you won't want to do it anymore. Just like when I was young, I used to go snow skiing, skiing in the snow. And I had some really bad experiences. I actually just about fell off a cliff while I was snow skiing. Krishna saved me. There's a whole story about that. And I don't want to get on skis again. So anyway, also I had a bad experience. What a bad experience! I had a bad experience when I was in my mother's womb. I had to stay there for 9 months. It was terrible. I was all like curled up and everything like that, and I couldn't move. And my mother was eating meat, fish, and eggs, and I was just thinking she should be a devotee, but couldn't do anything about it. And therefore, I was kicking her, but she didn't get the message. So anyway, so I'm just making a joke about it. But there's many bad experiences we've had, and we tend to become traumatized by those bad experiences. Right? So that's an impersonalist. They're traumatized, PTSD, but there is a positive spiritual reality out there. Okay, anybody else have a question?
Thank you. I've got a question.
I do agree.
Well, we got some competition here. Who asked you?
It's Radha
We got
Sundari.
Andre, and we got, okay. Ask a
Gurudev,
question.
Gurudev, Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam, Gurudev. I just wanted to ask you about senior devotees and junior devotees. Is there should be a difference between senior devotees and junior devotees, or they all should be same? Because
Well,
sometimes we have old.
senior devotees tend to be old, and junior devotees tend to be young.
Yeah, but sometimes we have, like older gentlemen and lady, they just join and, and they are seniors, so I don't think so we should discriminate between senior and junior.
I think we should see people based upon how advanced they are in Krishna consciousness. And we should respect all living entities. It's not that we disrespect some people because they're junior or because whatever. We should respect all living entities. Devotees that are less advanced, we try to help them in devotional service. Devotees that are equally advanced, we make friendship with. And devotees that are more advanced, we serve. That's all. And this distinction between junior and senior, there is an etiquette too. I know there's also Vaishnava etiquette that's is important just to order society. Like for example, like if you see a sannyasi coming, you're supposed to offer respects. Even though the sannyasi, even if the sannyasi is an impersonalist, you're supposed to offer respect to the sannyasi. That's what Prabhupada said. So there's an external etiquette, and then there's all internal dealings too. So we have to make a distinction between the two of them. And we also have to see who is advanced in devotional service, who is not advanced in devotional service, who do we serve, who do we make friendship with. But external etiquette should also be observed. Like, for example, if the President of the United States walked in the room now as I'm giving class, what would I do? Anyway, I would stand. No, there's etiquette. I would stand up and, I don't know if I'd shake his hand, do a fist bump or something. I would, because he has a position, there's external etiquette. You understand?
Yeah.
I'd observe the external etiquette, even though in my heart I would be thinking, was that hee-haw, hee-haw? Anyway, I would be thinking. Anyway, I cannot say what I'd be thinking. Even though in my heart I'd be thinking something different, but externally I would observe the social etiquette. That's a Vaishnava. Like Prabhupada was asked one time, what is the quality of your devotees or disciples? And he said they were perfect ladies and gentlemen. So that means we have external etiquette, we should act according to that external etiquette, but internally we know the difference. Okay?
Thank you, Gurudev.
Important. It's not, yeah, external, it's an ornament. The external etiquette according to the society and we're in is the ornament of a Vaishnava. Very important point.
Yeah, because some Vaishnavas, they say, I'm senior. So I just get confused because sometimes they are not as qualified as, like, you know, you can see.
Don't tell them that.
No, like, I don't tell them that, no.
You may be senior, but baby, you are junior.
I am junior, always will be.
No, don't say that to that. Don't. I'm not saying you, but you don't say that to them.
To them, yeah. No, because that's what I'm saying, Gurudev, because people are saying. So that's why I thought I asked you this, because it doesn't sound...
Actually, an advanced devotee usually will not be declaring their their senior status.
Mm.
An advanced devotee will be thinking, I'm just a servant of the servant of the Lord who maintains the devotees in Vrindavan.
That's what I thought too, but anyway, it's the mentality. Thank you.
Yeah, people just think like that. We just be humble, more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. That is important. Okay.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Oh,
can I ask a question, Gurudev?
Oh my God. Who has a question? Oh, go. Was that Govardhan? Oh, it's
yeah, Govardhan. Hi, Bob, Gurudev.
Good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to see you. So regarding working for Krishna or working in Krishna consciousness, as you know, I've been away from Krishna consciousness for like 10 years. And one of the businesses I started, I'm pretty detached from. I don't have a lot to do with it, but I profit off it. And there's some activity that's pretty bad karma, you know, like it's a restaurant and it serves, it's a bagel shop, like a Jewish bagel place. So there's lux. And I don't know how do I, you know, I can't shut the business down. I might try to sell it and, you know, like that. So it could be in someone else's hands, but how do I act in Krishna consciousness? Now I'm coming back. I'm fairly enthusiastic about it, but I have these activities that I'm engaged in that are pretty sinful. So
that is a very interesting question. I mean, ultimately, you should be thinking of a way to divest yourself of these activities or transform the activity. I mean, maybe find some vegetarian lox, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, I was, I mean, I could just stop serving that stuff, but then I won't be able to compete with the other, you know, shops in town. But all my other businesses are pretty karma free. They don't engage any of that stuff, but just this one shop does. So I'm a little, I'm not quite sure what to do.
You could sell it. I mean, I don't know if now is the best time to sell a business, but maybe not.
Right.
You could sell it or turn it into a vegetarian shop, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would be popular. What he's talking about is bagels. For those of you who aren't from a Jewish background, whenever you have bagels, you have to have this thing called lox on it, which is actually fish on top of it. was it salmon or something like that?
Yeah, it's salmon.
It's salmon.
So even though I'm not partaking in it, I'm responsible for distributing it ultimately.
Yeah, so ultimately it'd be good to figure out a way to divest yourself or transform it in such a way so it's not karmically heavy.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. I mean, use your judgment. You're a good businessman. You can figure that out.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. Welcome home, partner.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No more questions today. I'm going to make an announcement, sort of an announcement, that we have Radhastami coming up next week here in the United States. We celebrated for 2 days, the 25th and 26th of this month. And on the 26th of this month here, which is also the 26th in the evening in New Zealand and Australia, we're going to be having like initiations here, initiations in New Zealand and Australia simultaneously on Zoom, on my Zoom channel and also another Zoom channel from the Gold Coast in Australia. So that will be, the timing of that will be 5 o'clock in the morning here, which is 7 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the evening in Australia, and 9 o'clock in the evening, Fiji and New Zealand. Yeah, I got that right. All on Radhastami. So there's going to be initiations. There's at least 3 people in New Zealand who are going to be taking first initiation, 3 or 4 people are going to be taking second initiation in New Zealand, and at least 1 person in the Gold Coast is going to be taking initiation, and probably about 4 or 5 people or 6 people, I forget how many, here in North Carolina. And all that's going to be done simultaneously at 5 o'clock in the morning, East Coast, U.S. time, 7 o'clock in the evening, Australia time, 9 o'clock in the evening on Radhastami, the 26th of this month. So you're all invited to tune in and I get the karma. So pray, please pray for me. I need all the prayers I can get. Okay, on that happy note, we'll see everybody tomorrow night at the same time. Same station, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.